Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. We're here. Well, no, I'm here and you're there, wherever there is. But there, as far as you're concerned, is here. But it's not the same here that's my here, because otherwise this would be a very, very crowded studio. You wouldn't all fit. Basically, that would be the main problem. I wouldn't have any huge issue with it, but you just wouldn't fit in this room. It would be a bit of a squash, a sardine situation going on. And nobody needs to be a sardine. If you were going to be a fish of some kind, you know, you'd be like a killer whale, an orca, or a barracuda, or something. Not one of those crap fishes that swims around in shoals and then gets pushed to the surface. So not only do you get eaten by the big fish that are pushing you up, you get eaten by the fucking, by the birds that, you know, dive bomb into the water, and they get the fish at the top and the big fish get the fish at the bottom, and then there's about three of these little Nemo fuckers left, and they go off and, you know, make fish love together and make another big shoal, and then they all get eaten. It is, of course, the circle of life. That's what I'm talking about. Is there a thing called a lionfish? Could there be a lionfish king? I don't know. I think I've taken this just a bit too far. I feel like I should Google that now. Lionfish. Is there a thing called a There is a thing called a lionfish, and it's venomous. It's also called the zebrafish, the firefish, the turkeyfish, tastyfish, or butterfly cod. What? I think somebody's been playing around with Wikipedia here, but that's what it says right in front of me. Lionfish. It looks sort of like, you know the fish that Homer ate the bit of in the sushi restaurant in The Simpsons, and then they thought he was going to die, and he didn't die. Well, he didn't die, obviously, because, you know, he's still alive 25 years later or whatever it is. Homer is still alive. So, what the fuck is going on here? Well, the season is over, and we have had a few days, a little while, to come to terms with where we finished in the table. I still don't like it. But that's something we might say for our discussion. And we're in this weird, strange place now where the season is over for pretty much everybody else, but we've got 2 weeks, just under 2 weeks, before the Europa League final, which takes place in Baku in Azerbaijan. And so much depends on that game. There's so much resting on it for what we need to do this summer and for what we will be doing next year in terms of the football we'll be playing, the Champions League or not Champions League. I mean, I hope we are. It is this weird thing, isn't it? Where, you know, we don't really have a realistic chance of winning the Champions League. It's not impossible, as events this season have shown us, that, you know, you can be absolute shit cunts and, you know, be on the verge of doing it. But that's a different thing altogether. You know, but realistically, we don't have a chance of winning the Champions League. But we all want to be back in the Champions League. And if we get there, it will be because we've won the European trophy that we're best suited and most capable of winning. But I don't think I would like another Europa League campaign. I've, you know, sort of had my fill of the Europa League now. The Thursday-Sunday thing, that gets old very, very quickly. It means you don't really play any games on a Saturday, and I know that that's true of many other teams, but in general, we haven't had too many Saturday games this season, and you kind of miss those a bit. Sorry, my voice broke in the middle of that sentence. And, you know, the quality of the opposition and everything else, it is just not really a fun competition now. If we win, of course, on May 29th against Chelsea, it will be very, very fun indeed. I'm not saying that that won't be a fun thing, but, you know, over the course of a season, it's not much fun, I don't think. And I'm ready to be back in the Champions League again so we can go out in the round of 16, but, you know, as a building block and as a way of increasing the revenue that this club is going to take in and hopefully then reinvest in the squad. Stop laughing. Stop it. We do. That's our whole point, isn't it? We spend the money we make. So the more money we make, the more money we have to spend on, you know, players and things. You know, good players. Maybe not good players. Better players. Maybe that's where the bar should be. Better players. But between now and May 29th, there's just going to be a lot of talk about Baku and Azerbaijan and Henrik Mkhitaryan and the fact that the game is being played there at all because of how few fans are going to be there from both clubs. I think they've probably fucked it as a spectacle. You know, we all know this, but it doesn't mean the game isn't going to take place. And take place there, it is, and we have got a lot riding on that game. So we'll talk a bit about that in our discussion as well. And I think we should get on with that now. And with me tonight to chat about the season as a whole, to chat about where we finished and looking ahead to the final, looking ahead to the future and what we've got to do this summer. I'm delighted to welcome to the show, first up, the man from East Lower. Hello to you.
Hello.
And you will listen to him. If you listen to the Arsenal Vision podcast, you will hear Clive Palmer on there every week. Well, most weeks anyway. Clive, nice to have you.
Hello, hello. Nice to be on.
Right, Jim, can I start with you? Because I was doing my scant bit of research before this recording, and I remembered that you did blog a little bit this season. Not very much, but a little bit. And your last blog is quite interesting in that you went through our away games.
Yeah.
And you rated them in terms of a banana skin rating each. So Everton had a 3, Wolves had a 4, Leicester had a 4, Burnley had a 3. I think looking at it now, the thing that strikes me is there was nothing about the home games in there. And I think that maybe told us a little bit about what we thought Arsenal were going to do in those home games. And if you think about what happened against Crystal Palace and against Brighton and where we ended up, it makes my teeth go on edge a little bit. So just in terms of where we ended up and how we ended up, with a few days of reflection, how are you feeling about it?
Well, it was very frustrating at the time. And, you know, I was only partly tongue-in-cheek when I was going on about the banana skins, because they really were banana skins, and we pretty much did trip up on 3 of the 5. But like you say, we also lost the 2 home games, which I didn't see that coming. So it ended really badly. But I do think that you know, with the Europa League, but also with what, you know, just the general positioning we were before, then maybe you can look at it in a slightly more broad way, and it isn't quite so, I mean, horribly frustrating though it is and was. Maybe that it's not the only thing to dwell on.
Yeah, no, sure, I get that. But can you separate your, and I think probably everybody was in this boat, where pre-season, if you'd said we'd finish 5th and a point off 4th, you'd go, yeah, I could see how that would happen, but I'm finding it difficult to separate that it happened from the context or the circumstances in which it happened.
No, I totally agree. But I do think, yeah, you know, and again, spinning the positives here, I do think that it all collapsed at the end. But I think it was always going to be a season where Emery was trying to work stuff out, where he was trying to try different things. He was going to try different things. He was going to see what the players could give him and what they couldn't. And I'm not sure that we really could have expected much more. I know that the collapse at the end means we could have expected much more, but I still maintain that it was always going to be a year where things went right and things went wrong, and it was a lot of trial and error going on. So I prefer to look at it that way than to dwell on what was quite frankly the collapse at the end.
The what might have been. Clive, how are you feeling about it? You know, same questions to you.
Yeah, I'm as disappointed as anybody, really. I think also the opportunity was there, and I think post the World Cup year, a lot of our sort of top six opponents had a lot more players playing in semi-finals and finals, and I always thought they would come back to us. And when, particularly Spurs, when Kane got injured the first time round, just after sort of January time, I was thinking, right, this is it. Then Spurs went and won four on the trot, two late goals right at the end against Fulham, for example, and Son turned up, and I think, okay, this isn't going to plan. But then they collapsed. But then everyone else collapsed in the bottom four of the top six. Everybody sort of hit a wall at the same time. And I sort of always bring that back to the European draws. I think our Europa League draw was pretty tough. Spurs had some very tough Champions League draws, obviously historic for them. And I just don't think as a four, we managed that very well. And I just think we had an opportunity. And I think if we had a slightly easier Europa League draw, I think we would have focused on them home games a lot more, it's particularly Crystal Palace. And in hindsight, those points were crucial. But there's also another side to it. If we'd got those points, maybe the other teams would have reacted. They reacted to us dropping points, and there wasn't the need for them to gain more points than us. So I do think it just feels like a missed opportunity to me, Andrew. I just, it's particularly because I just felt that we had a lot of players in the summer that were here with us. We had a chance to integrate in the squad. We had some moments of high points and we had some false dawns, but we just need to win our home games when it come down to it. And if we had done that, Crystal Palace and Brighton, it'd be a different conversation.
Yeah, well, I think we were asked on the Arsecast Extra which game was the most damaging, and I have to say, I think the Palace game, even though Brighton, was eminently winnable and everything else, but I think the way we threw the Brighton game away really informed the rest of our little run there. So, I mean, to me, it feels like a massive missed opportunity, and I would feel, and I'm sure you and Jim would both feel, much happier going into a Europa League final with Champions League football for next season secured. And it's this weird situation we're in now where that's still possible. And so much of how we view this season, Clive, is going to depend on what happens in Baku, isn't it? Because if we win, we're going to celebrate like crazy because we're going to win a European trophy for the first time in 25 years. And we're going to celebrate like crazy because we're going to be in the Champions League next season. And it's not simply being in the Champions League. It's all the associated things that go with that in terms of how you're perceived as a club, your stature, your revenue, what it might allow you to do in the transfer market, the kind of players you might attract or be able, you're able to afford. And we won't look back on that run-in, as awful as it was, in the same way as if the worst happens in Baku and we don't win. So there's like a huge amount. I can't remember so much riding on a single game for a long time. You know, maybe the FA Cup semi-final against Wigan and then the final against Hull. Maybe it's equivalent to that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it is as big as I can remember. Even going back to Paris in 2006, that was like an exclamation point on a unbelievable era, right? The best Arsenal team we've probably ever seen.
Yeah.
And that was the game where we thought, okay, are we the best in Europe? And I firmly believe we would have been if we would have stayed at 11 men, but that was a moment in time. All the other European finals were just, they were days out. They were days out, and I was there in Copenhagen, and trust me, a good couple of days out that I barely remember, right? So, but I never thought back then that would be the last time we won the European trophy. And I do think, as a club, we have massively underachieved in Europe for the size of club that we actually are. And I think if we could choose, or the club could choose, a route to the Champions League for our sort of global visibility and our position at the European top table, given all the conversations around European Super Leagues, this is the route they would probably choose. Financially, it probably didn't stack up quite the same due to the percentile of the Champions League money that we will get if we're the fifth team in the tournament. But I feel from a club perspective, and you know more than anybody, Andrew, how global our fan base is.
Yeah.
I think it'll be absolutely huge for everybody. And I think I watched the Derby game versus Leeds, and that was a £170 million game, they reckon, on average. This is probably a, £100 million game, £60 million game for transfer budget, but you think of all the other revenue that will come in, come on board if you've got to Champions League, you could be talking, this is £100 million game. You literally could be, and I don't think in our recent history there's been a bigger game since probably Paris from a purely win the Champions League perspective. So I do think it's absolutely massive for everything the club stands for, but also bringing it in, into a narrower view for the manager, really, and him regaining trust with the fan base and the potentially the board to support him, whatever that board looks like. I said that term loosely. And basically, that's what I'm hoping for. Because if he wins this, he buys himself a year. And he buys himself a good year. Because, you know, we're quite an impatient bunch. So I think for stability and serenity on a longer and hopefully a new pathway, I really, really hope he wins it.
Yeah, well, I think we all do. Jim, I mean, what would your perception be of him if we didn't? And I'm throwing this out as a hypothetical, of course, not as something that anybody wants to see happen. But, you know, if we were to have achieved top four and we didn't quite make it in the European final, you know, you've got that safety net, that bit of a cushion. And everything now rests on this game in terms of how Emery's first season is perceived. Because if he wins it, I mean, he's going to do something that Arsene Wenger couldn't do in all the time that he spent at the club, and that's win a European trophy. But if he loses it, he's going to be the guy who threw away that brilliant chance to get into the top four. It might be a little unfair. I don't know if you would say that was unfair or not, to be judged so harshly or so... what's the opposite of harshly or so well, I guess, on the outcome of one game. But, like, it is monstrous in terms of importance.
Yeah, it is. Clive's absolutely right. It's like the playoff final, but sort of with bells on. And I think also, you know, I think the point about our European pedigree is really valid. We haven't done very well in Europe in our history. And so you could almost say, unfortunately, we look at the Europa League through the prism of getting into the Champions League. But actually, in itself, I know the Thursday-Sunday routine is pretty grim, and it screws with the whole of our routine. And I really think that is also a factor. But, you know, just to win a European trophy would mean a lot for this club. So, you know, that's without the Champions League sort of bolted on the end. But in terms of Emery, I mean, I've always been of the mind that he needed 2 years before you properly judged him. I think to come, even if we fell short, fall short in Baku, to me, it feels way too knee-jerk to say, right, over to the next man. There's so much work to do. And I think you could always look at it, I mean, massively positive light, that he came desperately close in, you know, to the top four, to the Champions League through the top four, but also in, you know, losing a European final. And I think that, given the transition year, given how much work needs to happen on this squad, given 22 years of Arsene Wenger, where some habits are, you know, really hard to shift, I think would be not a bad season. And it would be immensely frustrating, but I think he'd merit another year to see what he can do, and then judge him after that. That's the way I've always looked at it, and I haven't changed my mind.
Mm. Clive, where would you stand on that? I mean, a year, I mean, when you step back and look at things objectively and rationally, which is not always easy because we're so invested in this emotionally, you would say that, you know, the guy who comes in after a 22-year legacy manager is going to need time to properly assess his squad and what kind of a club he's in and who his players are and what they can do and who he likes and who he doesn't like or who he can trust and who he doesn't trust. So at least another 12 months makes sense on that level. So, you know, regardless of what happens in Baku, is that where you would stand on that? Or does it leave too much of a mark on him, you know, to have seemed to have failed to get us into the top four based on the position we were in, you know, with five or six games to go, if not necessarily what people's expectations were at the start of the season, and then to have followed that up with, you know, losing in a final?
I think we were always the fourth or fifth strongest squad, really, and we had a little sneaky look at third for a little while, but none of us, let's be honest, we weren't convinced, none of us were. We know that we're a little bit, you know, a little bit flaky when the pressure really hits. That hasn't changed yet because the playing culture hasn't really changed. I think Jim's right. We started the year post-Wenger generational manager. We started the year thinking, okay, this guy, 2 years into the top four. Then that narrative suddenly changed. Like, suddenly it's 1 year. When did that happen? I don't remember when that changed. But we had the big run, and then we started to get a little bit more encouraged about how competitive we were, particularly in the top six games, which hasn't been there in previous years. And then suddenly we are looking at an opportunity this year, and I hope, hopefully it'll end up correct. But for me, it was always a year of discovery in the first year. I read somewhere that he's used more squad members than any other team in the Premier League. So he has tried manfully to find the right mix, to discover what players are really worth. I mean, I wish he hadn't quite discovered Carl Jenkinson versus Crystal Palace, but he felt he had to do that. And based on how Maitland-Niles played against Everton when he was tired, I can probably see why, with the European game around the corner. So there were some decisions that were questionable. But when you're a manager that absolutely makes lots of decisions every single week, your decisions are going to be questioned when you don't get them right. And I think that's where the issue is, Andrew. I think people are desperate to look at this manager and look at this team and say, what are they? What do they represent? What is their style? And I'm a big believer in, okay, let's have a look at what he can do with this squad, which we all know is not where it should be. How can he manipulate to get us to be more competitive? And I think he's done that. So I think there has been an improvement this year. But I think we're sort of, many of us are obsessed with seeing a particular style every week, when I actually think his style is flexibility and having the ability to change in game and for another game next week. And I think, I know you're going to come on to that later on, but as we look to rebuild his squad, we should bear that in mind. How the manager coaches, how he approaches each individual game, and then has he the tools to actually implement a flexible tactical style on each particular match.
So let me just follow up on that, because something occurs to me while you're talking about it. If that is his style, this flexible style, rather than being wedded to one base formation, which, you know, I have to say, my preference would be for this team to be able to, or to have a platform at least on which to base the flexibility. I feel like there's an element of confusion about some of our performances, which may or may not be down to the manager. It may be down to the players. So is it a question of having players who are more flexible? Because we do seem to have a number who aren't really that flexible at all. Like, this isn't to
I know what you're going to say.
isn't to pick on him in any way, but Mesut Ozil, for example, fits into a football team in a very specific way, and it's not often the way that Unai Emery sets up his football team, right?
Yeah, so, you mentioned two words there, platform and Ozil. Right?
Yeah.
So, platform, we don't quite have it, do we?
No.
No matter what we're trying to do, if you turn around and your centre defender is watching people run past him while he's trying to blame the goalkeeper, you have no platform. You can't see a style develop. You can't see a performance develop because you're letting shots go into your back door, right? So, and then you have a situation, you know, I've been looking at a lot of statistical season summaries, and we're talking about the amount of shots that we have. I believe we've had like the 11th. I think we're 11th in the table when it comes to shots on goal. And then we look at, you know, our chance creation, and you say to yourself, okay, in attacking midfield, we got a couple of 30-year-olds that are earning over £500,000 a week. Are they really working for us? Are they really creating for us? Are we asking our top two to create and score? And so there are fundamental issues within the culture of the team that we need to address this summer, and there are fundamental issues with the word platform. Can we get some defensive stability within the team which allows us to see what we're really about going forward? And I think it's something that we have to be really brave about and really address. We all know it. We may not always say it or want to say it online for fear of the abuse we get, but we cannot continually allow the club to be defined by pillars within the squad, which are basically players that play when it suits them and plays in a style that suits them. When I feel the manager wants to move to a more flexible, tactical, collective, collaborative style. And I think the sooner we grasp that, the sooner we'll start to progress.
Jim, just on that, in terms of what Clive has just said, I mean, do you think there is enough ruthlessness within Emery to make those big decisions? Because he is talking about big decisions right there, about players who might well be moved on, leaving aside how difficult it might well be to move players on who are on very healthy contracts and would need to be, what's the best way to put this, highly incentivized to take their footballing skills elsewhere. You know, do you feel like that's within his wheelhouse? I mean, we don't really know him that well yet. So this summer could well be the summer or the period where we get to know Unai Emery better, whether that's better or for worse.
I think he has to be. I think Wenger had time on his hands because he won so much to get things a little bit wrong for a few seasons. Emery doesn't have that luxury. If he doesn't get us in the Champions League next season, I think he's gone. And so on that basis, his job is on the line. If he doesn't, if he is not, this summer is so crucial. His job is on the line. If he doesn't achieve that next, I'm convinced of that. And so he has to be ruthless if he wants, if he wants to keep his job, which of course he will. He's anyone who's working at that level is hugely ambitious and wants to win and achieve things. So I think he has to be. Otherwise, you look back at it and think, well, what if? But I think that's why it could be quite an interesting summer. He has to wield the axe.
Yes, I think he does. And we're going to talk in a while just about what we might do this summer and how we might do it. But I'll stick with you, Jim, and I just wanted to ask both of you a question that if you were to look at this season overall, you know, bearing in mind, of course, that we still have the Europa League final and still have a major chance for a successful end to this season, what would be your major positive from Unai Emery's first season in charge? What's the one thing above all that you would say, yeah, that's something we can really get hold of? That is a green shoot that I'm looking forward to seeing more of next year.
I think overall we were more, competitive. And by that I mean that we obviously went a step further than Wenger did in the Europa League last season. But more than that, there was something to play for in the league right up until the bitter end. And I know it was a bitter end,
but
the fact that there was something to play for, to me, says that there's been improvements there, and that made it more exciting as a season ticket holder. It made it more exciting, in the last 6 weeks of the season to actually be not going through the motions. And okay, it didn't end well, but I think I was quite heartened by the fact that that we were there until the bitter end. And whether it turns out in the right way or not, at least that is an improvement on last year.
Clive, for you, what's the one positive, if you had to pick one, that you would go with?
Well, I agree with Jim there. I feel the badge has got a little bit bigger. I think we were a bit smaller and a bit weak. We still have that tendency, but I do like the competitive nature. And I think a lot of that competitive nature was manifested in, particularly with one new player, really. I do feel the addition of Torreira gave me a little bit of hope to how we can play, how competitive we can be. And I think, I do feel that the fans want to love something again on the pitch. I think the previous years, I'm sure you'd agree, Jim, that within the stadium, it's been very, very toxic, and everyone, it's all been about hate, really, and division. And that's gone away a little bit this year. I don't go every week, but I go at least, to 10 games or so a season. And I've enjoyed them all. I've really enjoyed them all, even the ones that we lost. I felt the atmosphere had been more positive. And I think seeing players compete on the pitch more regularly and more often, even though we may have only scored seven or more goals or got seven or more points, it felt competitive. And I think people like Torreira coming in and watching the flowering of the top two, That for me has been the real highlight, really, and I hope that continues into next season.
Just to sort of, I would say our competitiveness against the top six was really encouraging for me, because it is a big issue. worryingly, you know, we weren't as good against the smaller teams, and whether that's something to do with the quirk of the fixtures or whatever it might be, whether it's something to do with Emery or his approach to those games, which I think it might be, but certainly for me a big positive was how good we were in those games. And you know, when your final game of the season is a European final against Chelsea, a Chelsea team that you've beaten and shouldn't have lost to in the other game, then that does give you some hope. Clive, I've got to ask you, you know, conversely, is there one thing that you think is a real negative from the season that you feel like either as a club we have to address, or Emery has to address, or a certain player has to address?
I think, apart from the obvious games, apart from the ones that we've already spoke to, which is, you know, Crystal Palace and Brighton, they come to mind. I think we're turning a new page, right, within the club. And remember last year when Ivan presented us this new team behind the team?
Yeah.
Well, that changed, didn't it? That changed. And I think what changed then, we had a bit of a void of communication, Andrew. You know, there's been no real noises coming from within the club. And I think Emery is, he's not the best communicator. So, and then obviously Raul and Vinny don't seem to be taking their front foot to communicate. You know, our owner, his nickname is Silent, so work that one out for yourself.
Yeah.
So there's just nothing coming out from the club. And what that does, that creates a void, and that creates a fan void, and we fill that. We fill that up. And I do feel if we want to mature and grow up and reestablish ourselves, it doesn't have to be a secret. We can talk to people about it. We can say what we want to achieve. Okay, when we say we're going to be as big as Bayern Munich, it can be held against you. But at least try to create a common goal and a common vision and an ambition about where we want to be. But then follow it with actions. At the moment, all we know about, if we're going for a cost-cutting phase, we know that we went to January and we had issues with two defenders being out for a season and one attacker being out for a season, but we decided to add an attacking midfielder into the squad. Then that doesn't look smart. So as we lurch towards the summer, where is the confidence about what we want to do? So none of us can be confident because we just don't know and we can't quite trust. So I think that's the key thing, to build trust again. Communicate is part of that. And I think that's the biggest failing for me this season. There's been an opportunity to really turn the page and we sort of fudged it, lost some people,
yeah,
power struggles internally, and we haven't quite delivered on that promise we felt when the new team behind the team was actually being introduced last summer.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. You know, Wenger was always the figurehead of the club. Whether you liked him, loved him, hated him, or were indifferent to him, there's no question that when it came to Arsenal, Wenger was the point of contact for everybody. Yeah. Media, fans, players, whatever it was, you know, he was so synonymous with the club, and it was his message that was transmitted to everybody. Again, whether you liked it or not, it was there. And now I feel and have felt for some time that that's missing. And it's an important part of how you run a football club. You know, sometimes, you know, I'm not saying for one second here that I want to be sitting listening to Ivan Gazidis every week talking about the shit that he talked about. You know, nobody needs to hear that. But, you know, it feels like they kind of fudge that a bit because we have this job share CEO thing going on. And, you know, Emery is learning a new language. And from people I've spoken to, you know, in Spanish is obviously a much better communicator, but still not the sort of charismatic figurehead that you need associated with a club. You know, I think that's a great point and maybe something that has to be addressed. Maybe Edu can be that man. Jim, for you, where would you look at the last season gone as a negative and something you'd really like to see addressed?
Well, so from a sort of off the field look at it, which is Clive's really, I'm going to go onto the pitch and think, I really do think that I expected a bit more defensive solidity. Mm. And on the basis that, you know, defence is, you know, the first form of attack. And he also had three new defenders. I expected more. And I think he's, you know, with all the caveats about players being injured and what have you, I think we've been way too easy to break down at the back. It's been changing, chop and changing too much. And yeah, with 8 clean sheets out of what, 38, it's really not good. And I expected a bit more there. In fact, we've ended up, I think, letting in the same amount of goals as last year. And I think you're not going to get anywhere if you don't start defending better, whoever you've got, you know, on your wings or up front. So I do think that has got to be a huge priority for next season. And he needs to prove that he knows what to do to tighten up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, just sticking with you, Jim, and I'll let Clive back in on this now in a second, but, you know, we talk about defence and we talk almost exclusively about our defenders, and some of the defenders come in for a huge amount of stick, and I can understand that, and I think many people listening to this will understand that, but, you know, it isn't just the job of the defence to help keep a clean sheet. You know, there's a way you can organise your team to protect a relatively subpar bunch of defenders. You can do more to make their lives easier. You know, you look at how impressive Bernd Leno was this season, but, you know, as impressed as I have been, I hope we don't see the same from him in terms of the sheer quantity of shots that he has had to save. And, you know, the defenders will take a lot of stick, but I also think we've got to look a little bit further forward in that. You know, how many times have we spoken on this podcast about, well, you know, if we really had a functioning central midfield that could protect the back four, that would go a long way to making us more defensively secure. And I thought at the start of the season, I thought we had that. And for me, that ties in with your general disappointment about our defending, is that we haven't quite figured that out either. And we did chop and change quite a lot during the course of the season in midfield.
Yeah, I agree. I think you defend as a team. I think, you know, that it's so getting so nuanced tactically and strategically football now, that there's a way, you know, an awful lot more to it than just your central defender making a mistake. Although obviously we had a lot of that. he's got to work that out. And whether I don't think we are quite powerful enough in central midfield, not just powerful enough, but aware enough, defensively aware enough. And that's another area he has to tackle. But I think, you know, if we let him 51 goals, I don't know what the target would be, but obviously a lot less than that. And, you know, even if you only let 10 fewer goals in, you're onto something. So I think that's a huge, huge area to improve. Like you say, not just talking about, well, let's buy a central defender and that's fine, because it's really not that straightforward. So there's a lot of work to do there.
There is. I mean, Clive, when you have an attack that has functioned as well as ours and has blossomed over the course of the season with Aubameyang and Lacazette, who have really shouldered a huge amount of the goal-scoring burden, because very few other players were scoring goals in this team throughout this season, it really is incumbent on the other parts of the team to support them properly in terms of what we give them as a platform. There's that word again, but, you know, a defensive platform on which to build attacking football. And we haven't had that. And I think that in some ways ties into this lack of style and this lack of identity. You know, it's very difficult to build play when you're all over the place at the back. And I'm just curious as to your thoughts on the midfield role in this, because when we look at the three players, I suppose, who played in central midfield the most, Torreira, Guendouzi, and Granit Xhaka. Torreira and Guendouzi are young players. They were 19 and 22 when the season started, both of them in their first season in English football. There was, I suppose, a large measure of responsibility on Xhaka as one of Emery's five captains and a player heading into his third season to show, okay, I can be the guy that works alongside these two. You know, I can play with Guendouzi, or I can play with Torreira, or the three of us can play together. You know, I can put behind me some of the issues and the flaws in my game, which were still relatively, if not understandable, you know, 24, 25, you're still kind of learning your trade. Once you sort of hit 26 and you're in your third season at a club, you want to be cutting out the kind of mistakes that have littered Xhaka's game. So I think for me, That's been the disappointment in midfield, that he hasn't been able to necessarily carry the responsibility that you would expect, and that he was, I think, in some ways handed.
Yeah, I think Shaq has been somebody that we've needed. And he's offered a sense of direction, control, and leadership on the pitch. But we all know he's got mistakes in him, and we all know he's not very athletic. And I think what's happening in the modern game is that it's getting faster. The pace is getting quicker, it's becoming more intense. Your ability not just to run kilometres, but to run repeat sprints, short distances, to get to the ball, to control the game state. Now, I think this is our biggest weakness. When the game gets really intense, we struggle to control it. It's quite interesting watching other teams putting their best runners against us. What they're telling us, they're putting their quickest, fastest, strongest runners because we can't match them when they turn it up. We can't. And Leicester's a great example of that, and Wolves did exactly the same. We can't match their pace. We can't match their intensity. We can't get control. When we can't get control, then our weaker points of our team become exposed, which is our central defence. What teams do is they disconnect us from our top two, and we can't regain control. Our top two are world class. We know that. On occasion, our attacking midfielder can be very good, whether it be Ramsey or Ozil or Mkhitaryan or Iwobi, but put them in a mix with the three you mentioned. For me, it's a problem. Obviously, Ramsey's going. Mkhitaryan and Ozil are both 30. They don't separate from their man. They don't create as many chances as they used to. Hence, our shot volume is down. They're not stopping people running through us. Hence, we're still conceding shots. So I always look at a team, Andrew. I say you have an exterior part of your team, which is your strikers and your goalkeeper and maybe your wing backs. The exterior part of our team is not too bad. Our wing backs create, our goalkeeper's decent, and our strikers we all know about. But the interior, the key defenders, the central midfielders and our attacking midfield, that's where the problem lies. And that's what we need to address in the summer. We need to create some intensity, speed and threat attacking-wise in midfield. And we need to have less joggers at the base of our team. So we have Elneny, Guendouzi and Xhaka, three joggers. Two of them got to go. Right, they've got to go, or we've got to. They better start speeding up, right? So Guendouzi is a very well thought of 20-year-old in Europe. He's going nowhere. The other two, maybe they've got to go. If we want to progress, they've got to go. And then he will probably be going to Bordeaux this summer. But Xhaka now is a question: do we do it now, or do we keep him in the squad to help direct some of the younger players that will be coming in for another year? He's got a good contract, there's no rush, but I think we all know if we want to progress as a group, we need to speed up, and he's a pivotal player, and we need something quicker, more aggressive, much faster, can carry the ball and offer threat to other people's teams, but protect us. We gotta have our best teams that we all remember. They protected our defence, and it's just not happening today, right? So forget the fact that we've got aged defenders or kamikaze defenders or defenders that are too young. So we need to improve that group.
Yeah.
But before they get there, it's an easy pathway through to them, isn't it? It's an easy path.
Yeah, and yeah, it takes one pass over the top to open us up, and as soon as we're turned and running backwards, we're doomed, basically. You know, I think Torreira showed this season that when the play is coming towards him and he's head-on towards it, he can win a lot of tackles and make a lot of interceptions, and that gets us going again. But I think you're right. You know, Xhaka, there's a decision to be made there for me, because he does have years on his contract, and he is somebody who could generate a certain amount of income if we sell him, particularly if, as we talked about earlier, we might have to incentivize some other players to go. Jim, where would you stand on Xhaka as somebody who could be a departure this summer? Because you look around the team and there are much more obvious departures in it, and we can all see who those players are. But as somebody who might raise a bit of revenue that could be reinvested back in the team, you know, we could go out and buy a player of the same age who could take on that responsibility in midfield with some of those younger midfielders.
Yeah, if we can get back what we paid for him, 35 was it? I think.
I don't know if we'll do that. But.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you never know. He's, you know, like you say, he's got a long contract and he has his attributes. Perhaps not. I just think if you look at, as Clive said, if you look at what Torreira seems to fit more in the vision, as such as we know it, of Emery, but certainly in the way football is going in this country, you know, the kind of speed and stuff, and Xhaka maybe less so. So, and he cost roughly the same. So it's not impossible to get somebody a like for like in terms of, you know, financially a like for like player. And if that, you know, he's got a good long range pass. He does the odd great thing, but I'm not wedded to him in any sense of the matter. Quite a few of these players, I'd be, I wouldn't say happy to see them out the door, but you know, I wouldn't be fussed.
You wouldn't be shedding too many tears,
I wouldn't be fussed if they'd moved on Xhaka. He's 3 years. He is what he is. He's probably not going to get a lot better. And so, you know, if the opportunity comes and there's someone who's good enough to replace him comes in, I think we have to, you know, go back to the point about being ruthless. I think it has to be done.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it depends what he's allowed to do and how much money he has to spend. And yeah, I'm sure you saw, Jim, during the week, David Ornstein was speaking to BBC Five Live, and he said that the priorities were a central defender, which I don't think anybody would argue with, and a box-to-box midfielder. Again, I don't think anybody would argue with that, and I think that tallies in, Clive, with what you're saying when you talk about athleticism and people who can run, you know, box-to-box midfielder fits that bill. They're talking about the lad from PSG, Christopher Nkunku. But then, you know, secondary briefs, like they might want a wide forward and they might want a left back and they might want a right back and they might want a forward to replace Danny Welbeck. There's a lot of mites going on there. And the thing that I suppose plays into that is the fact that we potentially only have a budget of £40 million. And I was told recently that Raul Senyehi was out in the US meeting with Stan and meeting with Josh, and he came back to London with no clear idea of what our transfer budget was going to be based on the two outcomes, I guess, Champions League football or not Champions League football. There's this air of uncertainty about what we've got to spend. So,
but I don't know, does it not help that we don't give that kind of information away?
Well, I mean, they're not going to post it on the website and say Arsenal have X amount to spend, but this is kind of what's going on. I mean, you know, it's not that thing, but it is. It does speak to me anyway to a back room which has lost its head of recruitment in February and hasn't replaced it. We've wasted money in January, despite saying January is not the time to buy players. I wonder if we could have gone down the leagues maybe and bought a player from a lower league team for what we spent on Denis Suarez, who would have been more used to us in the final 6 months of the season and going forward for what we spent on him, £3.5 or £4 million, you know. But, you know, how confident are you that we could, or that we can do, Jim, what we say we need to do with the money that we have available to us? I mean, it is going to require, A, some sales, perhaps of players we don't like, or not that we don't like, but we don't necessarily want to sell, and taking a good chunk off the wage bill, and we all know what the obvious ways to do that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all got our utopian wish lists, which probably involves sort of six players leaving and six coming in, but I don't think that's realistic. I don't think you rarely see, you know, six established players going in one season, and it's too much turmoil and too much money. And so I think, you know, probably some of the players that you and I and everyone else would like to go won't go. But I still think a lot of them will be shifted on. Yeah, actions speak louder than words. And this, yeah, I think you're right with the whole missile intent. Last summer we did five signings, and it felt like there was a lot of movement going on. This summer we need to do a similar amount. And the proof will be in the pudding. It's only at the end of the summer if, you know, will it be clear whether it was the missile intact that was the sort of driver behind some of these great players coming or some of these, you know, exciting players coming in, or whether it wasn't. And you know, it would be a massive shot in the foot if they didn't capitalize on this summer, because it's probably Emery's biggest chance he's going to get to do what he wants to do. And if we don't take the opportunity, now, then that's probably you're not going to get the chance again, is it? It's not going to happen in January. Mm. So it's got to happen.
Clive, you know, we looked at last summer when Arsene Wenger left and Emery came in, and they brought in five players, And we thought, okay, this is the first step in the rebuilding process.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this summer and I'm thinking, this is even more difficult. This is an even more difficult summer than last summer, you know, bearing in mind the manager, you know, who'd been there for so many years had just left, and we had this new triumvirate of people who were going to run things. It didn't last very long, obviously, but, you know, I look at this summer, just looking at it, Petr Cech is gone, hopefully with the Europa League winner's medal under his belt. Stefan Lichtsteiner is going to go. I would say Carl Jenkinson is probably going to go. Aaron Ramsey, as we know, is leaving. You talked about Elneny as a probable potential departure. We have big, big questions over Mesut Ozil, and we have big, big questions over Henrik Mkhitaryan. Both of them they're issues that the club has to address, I think, one way or the other. Danny Welbeck is going. There are other players in the squad that you could look at and say they need to go. I'm thinking of one central defender in particular. There is, I suppose, a question over some of the other players and what they produce, but, you know, they might be secondary. And when you look at how much has got to be done this summer, it's actually a bit frightening.
It is, and Jim's right, it has to happen. And I think the contractual state of some of those players are saying to you, yes, it does have to happen. You could add Monreal and Koscielny into that. Monreal's a free transfer, I believe, if he doesn't, so he could be gone. And so this is a renewal that should have happened a while ago, but because our previous manager overstayed his welcome and kept his friends close to him, we're now still clearing up that mess, I'm afraid. And so of the five signings we had last year, I would say that four of them have been a decent success, and one was a free transfer, and he will go and there's no issues there, right? So he'll walk away having a year in London, enjoying himself in Hampstead and Highgate. Well done. So that now we're going to move on into a different era. And Jim's right. This, maybe the manager doesn't communicate very well with the fan base, but his signings this summer will be his biggest communication, because we could argue whether they were his signings last year or were they club stability signings and an eye on the future. But this year, we know he's in seat. We know he is working with Raul. We know that what comes in this year will be, he will have a big stamp on it.
This will define him, right? What happens this summer will define not just him. Sorry to cut across you. It won't just define him, but it will define Raul Sanjehi, who is the man who is the driving force behind what happens to this football club from a footballing point of view.
Absolutely. So this will define the club's identity. Right? So I know that's a bit pending at the moment. It sounds a bit big statement, and maybe it depends on the competition that we go into. But say we're in the Champions League, we are now going to say, okay, we have X amount of funds to spend, and I agree we don't need to tell everybody how much, but how we build this squad is going to tell everybody what we are. Right. This is the first year of a sole ownership of Stan Kroenke, so no excuses now. You own the shop, now decorate it properly and clean it out properly. It's your asset, look after it, right? So I think that's going to be really important. I look at the squad and I look at it in almost three different levels, Andrew. I look at it from a young core, I look at it as a medium core, middle core of what I call the Mustafis, the Shakas and Aubameyang, Lacazette, and I look at the aged core, you know, Lichtsteiner, Koscielny, Monreal example. I think Cech. And I think we don't need to add any more aged players into this group.
No.
We have to decide which of that young core is really going to be here. And how do we surround them? And how do we build on that young core? But the real key part is the middle core with the Xhaka and Mustafis. Those two, potentially, you could say, haven't been roaring successes. So do we now say to our key top players in Aubameyang and Lacazette, you know, at the moment, the core behind you is Ozil, Mkhitaryan, and it's Ramsey's going, and we've got Xhaka and Mustafi. That's the middle core. We need to develop that. need to be brave and say, to hold on to you and to not ruin and waste your careers of our top, top players, we need to develop that middle core. And that's going to cost. Or you buy young, intelligent players with the right core fundamentals, tactical flexibility, speed, intensity, to allow the manager to tactically drive us forward with systems and coaching, and wait till we can really afford the stars that we need to add to the stars that we actually have. And to do that, we're going to have to create room in the wage bill. And to do that, Andrew, you know, I'm going to say there's two or three people that are overpaid, that are not quite doing it. I don't care how many final entry parties they have. My eyes tell me they are not separating from their man. They are not threatening people. People are easily stopping them. They're not consistent for the money that they earn. And we need to grow up about that and accept it and move forward. And the sooner we do, the sooner we can go even further against teams like Liverpool and City and look more competitive, because we will not do that with this current group, because those players are not going to improve next year. There'll be more backaches coming next year, right? and that's the truth. And it's just, and that's where we're heading.
Yeah.
So we have to just accept it. It's coming. Manage it. We have to pay people to go, because we've put ourselves in a situation. Pay the money. We may have to hold for another, a bit shorter, longer time till we can get more money in. Pay the money. Let's move forward. And let's get a younger, more competitive, faster, more physical and technically secure squad that can create a new identity for this team. Because right now, we're a little bit faceless. We need to create a new identity. We're a bit faceless because our core pillars are in departure lounge on the way out.
Mm. I mean, Jim, it feels like... I mean, what sort of gave me hope about the future when we had Sven Mislintat was the idea that he could identify these young, talented players who could come in and grow and develop. And maybe they wouldn't stay at Arsenal their entire careers, but, you know, such was their quality and their talent that they could have 3, 4, 5 good seasons with us and move on. And you know, when we all accept, as much as it pains us, that, you know, we're not a club that's going to be able to go out and spend big money on the biggest players, you know, certainly not until we equalize that wage bill a bit. You know, going after young players and building a team around young players was the strategy that I thought we were going to go for. I mean, I'm looking at what we've got to do this summer and where we've got to invest. And, you know, if you're talking about spending big money, I think the biggest money we've got to spend this summer is on a central defender and a central midfielder. And those are areas where we need to invest in genuine quality. And it strikes me that we might be about to see a generation from the Arsenal Academy given an opportunity that we haven't seen for quite some time, because they're the cost-free way of adding to your squad when your transfer budget is potentially as limited as ours is.
Yeah, if they're good enough, then I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I think also the thing about buying ready-made players, going back to Clive's point about athleticism, if you look at the players that are really a lot of the players that are dictating, you know, the better teams are very young, you know, and I think we need, you know, we need players at that early bracket. And like you say, if they're good enough, so I think because some of them, Maitland-Niles, and I could see him playing in midfield. He's athletic and he's quick, and I could see that happening. Obviously, you'd need to try it first, but I think next season, if you suddenly turn around and said, yeah, well, we've got Willock and we've got Reece Nelson and we've got Smith-Rowe, feels a bit early to rely on them, to me.
Yeah.
But they should be integrated in the squad, don't get me wrong. You can't just put them in for the sake of it, and just because you haven't got any money. I mean, you could, but I still feel that you need to go for young players, but players with a bit more experience as well. So I think you've just got to get the balance right.
Clive, I mean,
yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the academy, because if you didn't, you'd have got some posts, mate. I have to be honest with you, because there are some bright players, but it's so difficult. I mean,
yeah.
A year or so ago, I'd already christened Mavropanos as Cannavaro, right? And now he can't run more than half a game without pulling his groin, and so that's a classic example. And You know, I go over the top on young players all the time.
I know. But I know.
I will say that even though I'm going to do it again right now, I will say that this group we do have are very interesting.
Yes, you know? I agree.
They are very interesting. And what they do have is a level of skill, personality, and speed. So physically, they can cope. Now, pressure-wise and quality-wise, and I'm not playing with 200, but, you know, 60,000, that's not so easy, right? And delivering under pressure. I mean, look what Arsenal fans do to Alex Iwobi when he has a bad game. And he's 23 now, right? And so when he has a bad game, we all get into him, right? So you've got to have a level of mental toughness to be able to deal with that. You know, Maitland-Niles has a bad game. We soon get into him, but I think he's a huge talent. And every time I see these England squads being named, I just ask myself, well, does he not get a look in anywhere in that squad? You know, we're picking the players who are injured to go into that squad. And I look at him and I think, you know what, you've got to be getting closer to that level where you need to show a bit more personality playing for Arsenal. Then you can get closer to the top level. That's only around the corner. I am excited about this group. Amici, Saka, Willock, Smith Rowe, if he can stay fit, I think he should stay where he is. Reece Nelson, another one that's coming. There's a lot of excitement within the club about this group, and I think it will happen. Will it happen in September, August next year? Maybe for one or two, but I think we need to build this group really cleverly, make sure they get minutes out on loan, make sure they're building themselves first team experience, and the ones that stay, let's make sure they get proper minutes. Let's not have Elneny take their minutes. Let's make sure they get proper minutes because they are the right level and they've had integration. And I think it'd be wrong of us not to create a pathway for these players. And I've done it again, haven't I? I've gone overexcited on them. But I will say the speed and technique of these players allow them to look good. I mean, we saw Willock play in a semi-testimonial game the other day, and he looked okay, didn't he? He looked okay, and I think that's a great sign for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to say that there is a group that's interesting, and we've had young players who come through before, and they've been hyped up, and we expect a lot from them. You know, you go back as far as Bentner and Lupoli, you know, when they were tearing it up at youth level and everyone thought Lupoli would be the guy to, you know, to score all the goals for Arsenal, and he ended up playing in whatever, the Italian third division, wherever it was, you know, via Derby County or what have you. But, you know, I also think, Jim, that there is an element of timing and the circumstances being right for young players to make a breakthrough. So if you're a young player trying to get into Arsene Wenger's team in 2007, 2008, or whenever it might have been, it's a lot more difficult. And we're in a situation now where we are at this sort of rebuilding phase. We are going to have to let a lot of people go. A lot of people are going anyway. There are players in the squad who need to go that we... This sort of turnover almost demands that the gap is filled somehow. You know, if you create a void, you've got to fill it with something. And if you don't have the money to fill it with signings, there's only one other option. So it feels to me just a little bit like maybe the timing is right for a lot of these young players to come and make the grade, or at least be given the opportunity to show what they can do. As opposed to previous seasons where you go, well, he looks a really good young player, but is he going to play ahead of Cesc Fabregas or Thierry Henry or Lauren Koscielny or Per Mertesacker or whoever it might be? You know, the door has to open for you. And it feels like there's going to be a lot of doors open this year.
Yeah, I hope so. And also, you know, given that we keep hearing that we need to be a bit cleverer in the way we buy and sell players, then it's also a potential other revenue stream in the future. If you play these players a bit and suddenly their value goes up, if they're not quite they're not quite right for one reason or another, you can get some money for them. So there is that as well. But I think necessity will bring them through, and that will be massively exciting. Because I think one of the great things about being a fan is watching people, you know, players who have grown up with the club coming through. It's really exciting. But again, they have to be good enough still. I agree with you that if you had a sort of 2004 era team, and then they wouldn't get in even if they were really good. I totally get that, but they've still got to be good enough, because Emery knows full well that if we don't get Champions League this year, and not just him, I'm sure Conte wants it to not the win, no, but I'm sure he does. Then he can't just kind of freestyle it a bit just to get new players on board next year. He knows he's got to achieve it. And so that will, you know, the hard reality of it will always come into play as well. So it is about getting that balance right. Can we have five or six of those players in our squad and give them some minutes? Brilliant. I'm really all over that. But to rely on them when there are other pressures at stake, financial pressures, you know, all sorts of things, then, you know, it's possibly asking a bit too much.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree with that. Well, I kind of mostly agree with that, but also I've seen what we've done in the transfer market over the years to try and fill these gaps, and it hasn't always worked. So, you know, there's a part of me goes, well, just fuck it, try something different. Clive, just final thought to you on this.
Yeah, I think it's something that we've discussed before, myself and Tim on the podcast, and I think we have to decide how we want to use these younger players. I think if we're going to use them as, remember the Manchester United team, they used to have Wes Brown, John O'Shea and Darren Fletcher, and they would play, you know, Fletcher would play anywhere across the midfield, and John O'Shea would go into midfield, and any full-back and centre-back, and same for Wes Brown, he would drop into full-back or centre-back, and they would plug and play these players in, you know, core players from the youth team. And they're sitting there with six or seven Premier League medals under their pillows, right? So, and none of them were superstars, but they were absolutely critical to that squad. And I think we've done that with Maitland-Niles, and I think we can do that with others. I mean, you know, Saka, for example, looks like a very attacking winger playing for the youth teams, but he's also played left wing back and left back for the youth teams. So, like Ashley Cole, you never know, he could be a left back one day, quite easily. Right, so, and that's how you can develop when you get your opportunity in the first team. I think maybe to use these players as bench players, as multi-positional players that can cover gaps in your squad, which allows you to buy core players. And if you keep some of the older ones around, just to make sure, as insurance policies, like Socrates, obviously Aubameyang and Lacazette, to make sure while we're developing this squad, we can still make sure that we can stop goals, that we can score goals. And I think that's really, really key, and how we support them with the right type of players and give them leadership roles. So the five captains we had last year, let's go through them, right? Let's go through them. And maybe we need a new set. Right? Yeah. And I think the core leaders of the group now are our two forwards, potentially. They control the identity of the team. They control the leadership of the team. They're the ones that the fans sing about, talk about. And there's a new group developing. It's going to be so interesting to see how we add to that. And I think that's going to be the core thing in the summer I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, it is. I think because we're so in the dark about so many things, it's going to be an absolutely fascinating summer, and we all go into it, as we always do, with great optimism and hope that we can come out at the other side having done amazing business, but I don't think whatever happens it's going to be boring, so it's all ahead of us. I was going to talk a little bit about the Europa League final, but you know, it's a good week and a half away, and I might save that for another podcast, so for now we'll leave it there. But gents, a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully everyone's enjoyed this. Clive, as ever, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Jim, thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you. Cheers, guys.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you very much indeed to Jim, the man from East Lower. He's on Twitter at East Lower. And Clive, you can find him on Twitter at ClivePAFC. And those of you who listen to the Arsenal Vision podcast will, of course, hear the dulcet tones of Clive on that particular podcast too. Right. This is normally the bit of the show where we talk about the game coming up this weekend. But, of course, there is no game this weekend. And there is no game next weekend. And there is no game the weekend after. But in the middle of that, there is a game, of course, the Europa League final. And then there's no game for ages and ages until Arsenal go on their tour of the US to play in the International Champions Cup, the cup that all the champions of preseason want to win. I will be going over, actually, to the US to follow the team around, not like a groupie, but just to sort of do work and go to the games and do some podcasts and do some various stuff over there. So that's something to look forward to. That's a bit later on this summer, though. I'll give you more details of what's going on closer to the time. What else can we talk about? I don't know what else there is we can talk about from a footballing / Arsenal point of view that we haven't already covered on this particular episode. So we might just leave it there. I am going to do my very best to continue the Arscast every Friday. You know, it used to be a thing that during the summer, the Arscast would go into a sort of podcast hibernation, like a big audio bear sleeping inside a hollow tree waiting for preseason, or at least the new season, to start again so we could get it all going. But that's kind of the past. Things have changed. People want the podcasts. People want their podcasts. So I will do my very best to make sure that there is a podcast every Friday. I don't quite know what we're going to talk about, but hopefully all the stuff we've got to do this summer in terms of players coming, players going, going here, going there, selling this guy, not selling that guy. Why haven't we sold that guy? Why haven't we sold him yet? Come on! Getting overexcited already. But you know what I mean. There should be plenty to keep us going. And if not, you know, we'll just make some shit up. So, as ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you for being with us throughout another season. This one isn't quite over yet because of the Europa League final. So plenty to keep us going over the next couple of weeks. James and I will be here on Monday with an Arscast Extra talking about, you know, whatever. Whatever's out there, we'll be talking about it. And, of course, taking your questions. So until then, have yourselves a great Arsenal-free weekend. And don't eat any lionfish. That's my final piece of advice. It's good advice. Take it on board. And if you do eat a lionfish and you die because they're poisonous, don't come running to me, because I'll say, told you so. And also, get the fuck out of here, zombie, because you'd be dead. Until the next one, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to Sky Sports News. And breaking news right now, UEFA have announced the destination for the Europa League final in 2021. There was much speculation about where it's going to take place. Some of the front runners over the last few weeks, Outer Mongolia, that bit in the middle of Australia that simply does not support human life, and Tullamore. But today, UEFA have announced the game will be taking place in hell. With us to give some reaction from the winning bid, unfortunately Satan himself can't be here, but his spokesperson is Neil Trashton. Neil, you must be delighted.
Yeah, of course, Neil Trashton here. You know, it's a great day for football in Hull, and we've worked very hard to make this happen. The facilities down here are absolutely perfect, and I'm sure that everybody who makes the trip is going to have a fantastic time. It's going to be a feast of football.
Neil, isn't there the slight issue, though, that everybody who makes that trip is going to burn in the fiery depths of the underworld for all eternity?
Yeah, hi, Neil Trashton here. It is going to be a fantastic day. The weather's going to be absolutely scorching, and we're confident that anybody who comes will say this is the best Europa League final they've ever been at and will ever be at. And that's, you know, not simply because they'll all be dead. It's definitely not that.
Thank you very much indeed to Neil Trashton. A UEFA spokesperson has told us that they did not receive a single penny from Beelzebub himself to secure the rights of the game, absolutely denying any possibility of corruption. And who are we here working for Rupert Murdoch to cast judgment? We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Arsenal boss Unai Emery tells us why, despite all the various times of the day, evening is his favourite.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.